This mic, I don't know if it's going to stay on.
If this turns into a snake, I'm out of here.
Come here.
Oh my God, okay. I am an alcoholic and my name is Fred. He's much shorter than I am. I have to move this up. God in his wisdom selected this group of men and women to be the purveyors of this goodness in selecting them through whom I bring about this phenomenon. He went not to the proud, the mighty, the famous, or the brilliant. He went instead to the humble, to the sick, to the unfortunate. He went right to the drunkard, the so-called weakling of the world. Well might he have said to us, unto your weak and feeble hands, I have entrusted a power beyond estimate. To you has been given that which has been denied the most learned of your fellows, not to the scientists or the statesmen, not to wives or mothers, not even to my priests or ministers have I given this gift of healing other alcoholics, which I entrust to you. It must be used unselfishly. It carries with it grave responsibility. No day can be too long. No demands upon your time can be too urgent. No case too pitiable. No task too hard. No effort too great. It must be used with tolerance, for I have restricted its applications to no race, no creed, and no denomination. Personal criticism, you must expect. Lack of appreciation will be common. Ridicule will be your lot. Your motives will be misjudged. Success will not always attend your efforts in your work with other alcoholics. You must be prepared for adversity. For what men call adversity is the ladder you must use to ascend the rungs toward spiritual perfection. And remember, in the exercise of this power, I shall not exact of you beyond your capabilities. You are not selected because of exceptional talents, and be careful always if success attends your efforts, not to ascribe or personal superiority that to which you can lay claim only by virtue of my gift. If I had wanted learned men to accomplish this mission, the power would have been entrusted to the physicians and the many, I don't know what this word is, for the assignments, for the talk of the easiest used of all talents with which I have endowed mankind. If I had wanted scholarly men, the world is filled with better qualified men than you who are would be available. You were selected because you have been the outcasts of the world, and your long experience as drunkards has made or should make you humbly alert to the cries of distress that come from the lonely hearts of alcoholics everywhere. Keep ever in mind the admission you made on the day of your profession in Alcoholics Anonymous, namely that you are the powerless, and that is the only with your willingness to turn your life and your will unto my keeping, that relief came to you. This is called Why We Were Chosen. I have copies of this for anybody that wants it. I grew up in the South Shore of Massachusetts. I'm old. but not as old as some of you out there. When I was 5 years old and couldn't read, the teacher pinned a note on my shirt. If I had known what the note said, my mother never would have gotten it. The note said, "Dear Mrs. Slater, please come in so we can talk about Fred's attitude." I was five. I was already in trouble. I didn't even know what the word alcohol was all about. But man, I was a mess, and I was 5 years old. I didn't belong. I didn't know how to take direction. My mother and father didn't know what to do with me. My father used to say, "My God, we should have dropped you down the well." And that's how I grew up. I grew up in a house of no encouragement. I grew up in a house of nothing but criticism. And that's what I became, a very person that criticized and walked away from any talent that I had. I had an IQ of 185 years old. I was tested in Boston. They didn't know what to do with me. Music was a big part of our lives. My whole family on my mother's side was Boston Symphony. My mother was a trained concert pianist. It was handed down to me. This is one of the things that I walked away from, alcohol took away from me, was the gift of my music. I studied piano, I studied organ, I studied trumpet, and I took 3 years of opera, and none of it came to pass. So now we're going from 5 years old to 10 years old to 12 years old, and it's a toss-up which came first, alcoholism or puberty. And they both came at the same time. I lost my license when I was 16 years old. 3 months after I got my license was taken away from me because of my drinking. At 17 years old, I came home drunk, and my mother said to me, "This is my house. There are rules in my house. If you don't like the rules in my house, get out." And man, I'm going to tell you, I wanted to hear that. I left this little town where I milked cows, collected eggs, cut hay, and I went into Boston. I had been offered Harvard University, master's, bachelor, PhD, for nothing, if only I would go to Harvard University. I chose the combat zone in Boston. That's where I found my people. That's where I found you. At 17, or no, 18, I met a young lady. No, that's wrong. I met a female. She was not a lady. I think she was a female. And we got on a bus, and the last thing that my father said to me was, "Don't call me up 6 weeks from now to bail you out of jail." I was in a blackout when I got on the bus, and I got off the bus at Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I had no idea what I had done. 6 weeks later, I called my father to bail me out of jail. So this is my story. My nickname in Fort Lauderdale became Uncle Scotch. That was my choice. I worked on Las Olas Boulevard. I was fired from my job on Las Olas Boulevard. I was walking down to the unemployment office, and here's where my drunk log begins. On the left-hand side of Las Olas was a sign that said, "Fannin Funeral Home." I thought, oh my God, that looks, why don't I try that? And I walked into the funeral home, and I said I would like a job. I had never seen a dead body in my whole life. They had no idea of what was about to happen to them, but it happened. It happened, and there's where my drunkalog really is in a funeral home, is in an embalming room in the funeral home. They sent me to school. I did my 3 years apprenticeship. I got my funeral director's license. I got my embalmer's license. And in that embalming room is where I did my drinking. And I could make your aunt look like your uncle in about 5 minutes. And if I've buried any of your grandparents or great parents, I apologize right now. My ninth step was in every cemetery in Fort Lauderdale, I'll tell you. I'm sorry. I've got your underwear on. I've got your shoes. I've got your clothes. I didn't have to buy clothes for 10 years. If you were 6'4" and you had a 36 waist, which I don't have anymore, chances are you didn't go into the grave with your clothes on. You didn't. I had the best wardrobe that you could possibly imagine, of the finest shoes, and I could have opened up a clothing store. So Mrs. Jones would come in and she would say, I don't want Mr. Jones going in the ground in his old underwear. I've brought it. I would take my underwear off and I would put my underwear on Mr. Jones, and I got the new underwear. So this is what my life was all about. I had to join a church. They made me join a church for PR work. So I joined the Presbyterian Church and I became an usher in the church. And one of the jobs that the ushers do was to take the collection. And that's what I did. I took the collection. So, you know, I was just, if you were in my life, you got damaged. If you were in my life, you got hurt. Mentally, physically, financially, sexually, you name it, and you paid for coming into my life. That's the type of person I was. I was in a black suit in the daytime and get out of my way at nighttime. And that's what it was all about. So, I mean, things went wrong in the funeral home. And this one particular time, and I want to get into my recovery, so I'm going to stop all of this pretty soon. But I got a phone call. We had a lot of dead people in one particular day, and they were going to be shipped out, and they were going to be cremated. And I was drunk, and I got a phone call from Cleveland, from Euclid Avenue in Cleveland, and I answered the phone, and the man said, "What kind of funeral home do you run down there?" And I said, "Sir." He said, "I went to the airport to pick up Mrs. Jones, and there's nobody in the casket." And I had shipped an empty casket to Cleveland and forgot to put the body in it. So these are the things that took place. And I went to the wrong cemetery. I have fallen in the grave. I fell in a grave with the widow. I can go on and on and on and on about my 10 years of the funeral home experience. But I got to tell you about my coming into the program. The last thing that happened to me in the funeral home before I got blackballed, and I did get blackballed in the state of Florida. I went to Broward General Hospital at 2:00 in the morning, drunk, with what was my first wife. And she was drunk. And we went into the room to pick up this man. And I put the man on the gurney. And we're going down the hall. And all of a sudden, this voice said, "Where are we going?" I said, "I'm going to take you right back to your room right now. But I might be back later." I got fired. And one of the sentences that they said when they called me into the office was, "We can no longer protect you. We can't." And now I don't know what to do with my life. And I still had more drinking to do. Now I'm going to fast forward to the blackout that I was finally in that brought me into Alcoholics Anonymous. And that blackout started on March 11th, 1965. And when I came out of it, my house was empty. And I looked around and I really thought I had moved. I wasn't sure until I went out to the kitchen and I saw this this adding machine tape listing all of the things that I sold. And I had a yard sale in a blackout, and I sold every single thing that I owned. And in the kitchen was my first piece of literature. And it was the Hazelton Little Red Book. And it seems that I had ridden my motorcycle through a hardware store and cleaned off the shelves as I went through the front door and out the back. And the people knew me, and they brought the book over, and they put it on the kitchen table and with the phone number of the intergroup office in Fort Lauderdale. I called them, and they wanted my name. And I said, well, you know, I would like to know more about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you will send me some literature, I will I will take a correspondence course. So the woman knew she had a nut on the other end of the phone, and that was the beginning of my sobriety, was in the intergroup office in Fort Lauderdale. They got the literature over, and they asked me if I knew another alcoholic. And I said, I know one man that has quit drinking, but I don't know if he's an AA. And I called him. And he brought me to my first meeting in Pompano. And the first man that I met was Wesley Parrish. And I don't know if anybody in this room knew that name or if that name is so long ago. I don't know how many of you know that name or not. But at any rate, that was the beginning of my journey. And I liked Alcoholics Anonymous. I really felt when they said, if there's a newcomer in the room, would you please stand up and identify yourself? And Lee nudged me and he said, that's you, Fred. And I stood up and I said, my name is Fred and I'm an alcoholic. And my throat tightened up and I heard what I had said and I sat down and I cried. I don't know how many people were in that room, but it seemed like there were hundreds and there weren't. But that was the beginning of my journey. The novelty wore off. About 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks later, the novelty wore off of being in this program, and I thought, I don't know how I'm going to be able to stay. I really don't know how I'm going to do this. And the book that was handed to me, I no more wanted to read that book. I no more wanted to get a sponsor. I didn't want to do anything. I did not know how to take directions at all. And a man came up to me, and he ended up being my sponsor. He ended up being a person that he actually sat down with me. He knew that. I said, I don't even know how to read this. Here I have 185 IQ, and I don't know how to read the damn book. And he sat down and he pointed out pages. He pointed out pages in that book that I said, that's nice. And then he pointed out pages in the 12-step book. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? What? I don't even know what this means. I don't know how to say to another human being, will you help me? I didn't know how to do that. And he sat down there and he... Because I had such an issue with the higher power thing, with the God thing. I couldn't even get the word God out of my mouth. That's how much anger I had when I came in. That's how much anger I had out there as an alcoholic. The God thing in me did not click. So he pointed out some pages. He pointed out some stuff in some of the books. And one of the books that he pointed out was in As Bill Sees It. And he pointed out page 191. And on page 191, it says, these are not the exact words, but it says, nowhere is it written that you have to do the steps in order. And I looked at that, and this is something that Bill Wilson wrote, that you do the steps to the best of your ability when you're able to do the step. That saved me. That saved me because I could not do the third step. I couldn't get into it, and I struggled with the second step. And he pointed out a page in the 12 and 12. On page 26, it talks about jumping through the hoop. It talks about all you need is an open mind. And when I read that sentence, I realized that my mind is really closed. I didn't know that my mind was so closed. I didn't know how negative I was. I didn't know how much anger and how much hate I had. I didn't know anything positive. Alcohol did what it was supposed to do. It destroyed my thinking. It destroyed my life. It destroyed any chance of using those gifts that I had. It destroyed any possibility of having a loving, decent relationship with another human being. I didn't know how to do it. I knew how to have relationships for 10 or 15 minutes. Some of you might have had relationships that lasted 10 or 15 minutes, I'm not sure. I didn't know how to do it. So when he pointed things out like this, and when he pointed out in the back, in the spiritual experience, contempt prior to investigation, I realized, my God, I have so much contempt. How am I going to get rid of this? I'm not going to go into some of the adversity that it talks about in Why We Were Chosen, but I will tell you this. I did have an accident that put me in a body cast, and I was wrapped up in 38 pounds of plaster for 20 months. My anger was really, really out of control. I was facing my third 12-hour operation that would put me in bed for a year. And my anger was so bad, and I went out, I was on those Canadian crutches that you hook onto your elbow, and I went up to a stone wall, and I leaned against the stone wall, and I was sober 4 years, 1 month, and 2 days. I leaned against that wall, and again, I wept, and I wept, I mean I wept, because I did not know why are these things happening to me. I'm trying to do the best I can, and I keep on getting kicked down. Why? And a leaf fell from a tree. And the leaf landed next to me. And I looked down at the leaf, and I picked up the leaf, and I held the leaf up to the light, and I looked at how the leaf was made, and it changed me. And a leaf became my first higher power. My second higher power was in Fort Lauderdale Beach, watching the sandpipers run down the beach. And if you watch a sandpiper, it never gets wet. And the waves would come in, and that little sandpiper would run away from the water, and the water would go out, and the sandpiper would go back out with it. And the sandpiper became a higher power. And what has happened over a period of time is that I have added to my higher power, even though I belong to that church. And I still belong to that church today. And I take from that church what works for me, just like I do in an AA meeting. Sometimes I come into an AA meeting and I think, oh my God, almighty. Well, you're laughing, but it's true. It is true. You know, think, oh my God, I got to listen to him again or her again. Oh my God, I can get up there and tell her a story, his story. So I had to really struggle. I really had to struggle with this higher power thing and with the steps. And my sponsor started to get me into the steps, little by slowly. No pain, no gain. And when he came to the fourth step, and I had to write, and I had to write this stuff down. I had to write a story about my life. And I had to put in columns. And somebody said at this retreat, somebody said that how they worked the fourth step. Mine was, I could not write a negative thing unless I wrote a positive thing. He made me write a positive thing about myself. And then, after I found a positive thing, then I could write the negative thing and go down to the list. And that's how I did my first fourth step. I did many fourth steps. The fifth step, if you think that I'm going to tell you the whole truth, you're out of your mind, because I'm not going to tell you what I did. I will tell you the stuff that will make me feel comfortable, but I'm not going to tell you the good stuff. The good stuff stays with me. The day came It's like standing here. Nothing that I have ever done in my life, nothing is inside of here. It's all. I've been able to speak my truth slowly and clearly, and I get rid of it all. Not only to a sponsor, but I finally got so much freedom in my life. I finally got so much peace that the guilt and the shame and the remorse that I had, I didn't have it anymore. The anger that I had, I didn't have it anymore. And I didn't realize all of these over a period of time, this stuff was going to happen. What time is it? Anybody tell me what time it is? I became relatively successful. And I went to Maine. And while I was in Maine, I discovered something that I really wanted. And I looked at this place. I walked into a building with, it was a 26-room log cabin. And I thought, wow, this is incredible. And I walked in there, and it was part of a ski resort. Some of you have heard my ski resort story. I ended up buying the ski resort. And my sponsor said, Fred, don't do it. You live in Fort Lauderdale. You're talking about Maine. My family said, Fred, don't do it. My friend said, Fred, for God's sakes, don't do it. The president of the bank said, Mr. Slater, do you know what you're doing? And I said, yeah, I do. I know what I'm doing. I signed the papers, and I bought the place. And the day I signed the papers, it stopped snowing for 3 years. It was not good. I lost virtually every nickel that I owned. And I came back to Fort Lauderdale. And at 19 years of being sober and living in a high rise, I had to get out of bed. I had to get dressed because I had my moment of insanity with 19 years of being sober, that I could slide that glass door open and jump. And I was ready to do it. The following day, I went to my church, and I went to the minister, and for 3 hours, I blah, 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 blah. And at the end of it, I said, Dick, what should I do? And he got up from his desk, and he leaned across the desk, and he said, tithe. I said, what? He said, tithe. And I got so mad at that man, I forgot to commit suicide. That word saved me. That word put me in another dimension. That word, I went home and I learned something new. I learned how to give unconditionally. And that was a new beginning of a new way of life for me. I have been doing that ever since. Those who have much, much is expected. And I became in that category. I started another business. What I did not tell you was when I was in Maine, the person that owned the ski lodge that I bought, when I bought it, I said to her, I will buy your lodge under one condition. You stay for 1 year as cook. She stayed, she became my wife, and we were together for 35 years. She taught me more about life. She taught me more about unconditional love. She taught me how to have a relationship. She had been through her first marriage. I had been through mine. I had been stabbed twice in my first one. The only reason, that was not good. But I can go on and on and on with all of this. And finally, because of the adversity changed my life. And I was able to look at the word adversity and find out the purpose. What's the purpose for this? What's the purpose for the adversity? What am I supposed to gain out of this lesson? What am I supposed to gain from coming up here? I already got it. I already got what I came for up here. And it's not standing up here speaking. It's what I got, the fellowship that was out there and over there and at nighttime and in the morning and the daytime and in lunch and breakfast. And Damien. Never mind. What happened in my life over a period of time was the 11th step. And the 11th step, I had to study the 11th step if I wanted to change again. If I wanted to make a major change in my life, I had to make some major changes. And the 11th step was one of them. In that, I had done and was invited when I was sober 4 years. My sponsor that came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939 in New York, he and Wilson were like this. He brought Wilson down to Fort Lauderdale, and there was a private workshop for 4 days in Fort Lauderdale. I was one of the 40 people that was invited to that workshop. The workshop was on depression. It was amazing. You'll find part of that. I have a letter. I have things that I will give to you people after this meeting if you're interested in it. But part of what I learned from that depression was the 11th step prayer, the St. Francis prayer. And he, with his depression, he made a study of the 11th step prayer. And I got to do the same thing. I looked at that thing, and I would look at that thing, and I would read it. And then I would turn to page 103 in the 12 and 12. And I would look at that page 103 where it talks about a channel choked up with anger and fear and misunderstanding and frustration. And sometimes in my day, I didn't know if I was angry. I didn't know, and I would look at that, and I would find out by doing an inventory, I would find out that I wasn't angry. I was frustrated. I didn't know how to get through a situation. This program has taught me how to get through situations. This program has taught me how to get through adversity. This program has taught me, and because of the fellowship of this program has taught me all about unconditional, not to expect anything from anybody. I've learned how to stay on my own side of the street. My higher power, my God, my higher power has expanded so much. I can't get through a day. If any of you have seen me walking around here, I touch trees. I look at the importance of a leaf. I look at the importance of a blade of grass. I look at the importance of what we have. And that's what this is all about for me. It's taught me not what I've lost, but what I still have. This program has taught me how to laugh, even through the adversity. In that broken back thing, it was not good. It was not good to deal with. I had 20 bone transplants. In 1999, I had a massive heart attack. I've buried my parents. I've buried my wife. I've buried my daughter. And I've been able to get through all of those things because of what the program has to offer. I've learned how to go outside, and I wasn't ready for it, but I learned how to go outside of Alcoholics Anonymous for more knowledge. I wanted more. I got to the point in my life that I want more of what life has to offer. I ended up, even though I owned the book Sermon on the Mount, I was not ready to read it. And the day that I was ready to read it, I opened the book up and I came to a page, I think it's page 104. And it said, if you don't want the bell to ring, don't press the buzzer. And I thought, oh my God, that's incredible. So I got into the Sermon on the Mount. I got into so many of those books. Eckhart Tolle, I needed positive attitude stuff. So I actually got into the Bible. There's parts of the Bible that I really like. There's parts of the Bible that I don't understand. There's parts of church that I like. There's parts of church that I don't understand. In my quest for my higher power, I went to every single religion that you can possibly imagine. And I ended up embracing, I love the Chinese philosophy of I Ching. I didn't even know about I Ching when I came into alcohol. I didn't know about Buddhism when I came in here. I love the philosophy that is Buddhism. There's a book called Four Agreements. Does anybody know that book? It's an incredible, incredible book. It talks about the Toltec thousands and thousands of years ago. So not all of my program comes just from Alcoholics Anonymous, but Alcoholics Anonymous led me outside, led me, taught me how to do things. It taught me how to have a life. It taught me how to have a relationship. I don't know what time this meeting is over, but am I closing in on it? What time does this meeting end? Louder than that, Damien. Have I? One of the biggest things that I learned about relationship, before I get into that, I will tell you that I was speaking at the 12-Step House in Fort Lauderdale at an anniversary or whatever it was, I don't remember. And after I spoke, there was a man that is in this room tonight. Don't nod your head, you already know I'm going to say it. And he knew my funeral home stories. He knew me. He knew what I was all about. And he got up in front of 100 or 150 people when he was closing the meeting or opening the meeting, and he made the announcement in front of all of these people. He said, I want you to know something. Fred Slater is in my will. And he says, it goes like this. When I die, do not let Fred Slater anywhere. Do not let Fred Slater anywhere near my body. Stand up and take a bow, Mark. What has alcoholics done? It's taught me how to laugh. When my wife died, and some of you were involved with me with that, and it was very, very difficult. That woman taught me so much. And 7 years before she died, we found out that she had Alzheimer's. I would not have been able to take care of that woman if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have been able to be a caregiver if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous taught me so much. And the day that she died, she went into her bedroom and to take a nap. And I called her when it was time to get up. I called her and she didn't answer. And I called her a second and a third time, and she did not answer. And I didn't even have to get off the couch. I knew what happened. And I walked in there, and she died. And I stood there, and the first thing that came out of my mouth was, thank you, God. Because she did not have to go through the last stages of Alzheimer's. And I was so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful for you. I'm so grateful for what I've learned. I'm so grateful for the adversity that I've gone through in my life, because every single bit of it has I've gained from. I haven't lost from any of the adversity. This, you know, sometimes I go to the Galleria in Fort Lauderdale and I will get a cup of coffee and I will sit there and I will just say, oh my God, thank you, God. 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 I don't know what time this meeting is over, but I do know this. I'm done. Thank you very much.